The next case is 05-748, disciplinary counsel versus Joseph Simon Carpino. Mr. Adler.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Chad Radler on behalf of retired attorney Joseph Carpino. I'd like to reserve 2.5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Carpino practiced law for 40 years in this state, and until the claims raised in this complaint, I had an unblemished record. Now, in this case, the disciplinary counsel filed a complaint alleging that Mr. Carpino engaged in violation of the disciplinary rules in two cases that he handled late in his career, based upon some unusual pleadings that he filed and some unusual remarks that he made in court proceedings. The merits of those claims, however, were not resolved in this case, because before they were, the disciplinary counsel suggested, and Mr. Carpino agreed, to submit to an independent psychiatric exam. As a result of that exam, the board recommended a mental health suspension for Mr. Carpino. Now, Mr. Carpino would be the first to admit that he has long been diagnosed with bipolar disorder, that he's been treated for that disorder, and that he's not unlike many other Americans and two former U.S. presidents who have also suffered from bipolar. But he strongly disagrees with the recommendation that a mental health suspension is appropriate in this case. And let me remind the
court. Counsel, it's pretty difficult to read the very pleadings that he filed himself and not fear for any client he represents out there with the basic ranting and ravings that appear in his pleadings. I mean, we don't need a psychiatrist even to look at what he's alleging and how he's crafting his legal arguments to know that this is not somebody you want out there representing somebody.
Well, let me refer to some of the items that are in the record. One of the letters that was submitted to this court came from Judge Olivito. Judge Olivito was the trial judge in one of the two cases that are at issue here, in the Christian case. And as Judge Olivito wrote, that as a general matter, Mr. Carpino was always well prepared and approached issues with a common sense approach. And that in the very Christian case that is at issue here, that he did a good job in a very difficult case for a client who had two previous lawyers.
And doesn't
withdraw.
The disciplinary counsel have the right to weigh that testimony against the numerous other affidavits of other judges who said, no, there is a serious problem? I mean, well, they're the triers of fact, that they looked at all of this and they said, you know, this man currently has some serious issues.
Well, a couple of responses to that. First of all, Judge Olivito, who was there, said two additional things. He said, one, that Mr. Carpino vigorously cross-examined all the witnesses in that case, that the prosecutor in that case did not object to anything that Mr. Carpino said in that case, and that he believed that the Court of Appeals, some of those judges have submitted affidavits. He believes that the Court of Appeals, in being critical of Mr. Carpino, may well have misread and taken out of context many of his statements. Now, the affidavits that are an issue in this case suggest that some of his conduct may have been improper, and I'd like to repeat that there has not been yet a finding that this conduct violates disciplinary rules, or that it would rise to even anything more than a public reprimand or a very short suspension. But the medical evidence in this case comes solely from two doctors, Dr. Pelt, who is the court-appointed psychiatrist, and then Dr. Young, who is Mr. Carpino's longtime treating physician. And what Dr. Pelt said, most of his conclusions are unremarkable. He said, for example, that Mr. Carpino is competent, cooperative, alert, oriented to person, place, and time.
But when they posed the ultimate legal question to him, what was his response?
Well, his response was that Mr. Carpino's judgment was grossly impaired.
And isn't that a standard for taking him out on a mental health suspension?
It meets the first prong of it.
I mean, you can say all sorts of nice things about somebody that you're interviewing, but when you get to the ultimate legal conclusion, is this man competent to practice with his mental health issues? The doctor said no, did he not?
Well, Justice Stratton, you're right, but let's go back to the two bases that Dr. Pelt looked at. It was his second report where he stated that the impairment was grossly, or his judgment was grossly impaired, but that was just a two-line report. You have to go back to his first report to look at where he finds that conclusion. And in that initial report, he states on page 4 that Mr. Carpino's judgment is poor, as evidenced by his errors in the courtroom proceedings and in the use of others' personal information to obtain credit cards. Now, the first piece of that, we have a doctor reviewing legal pleadings and concluding, based upon his review, and he's not a trained legal practitioner, on his review of those legal pleadings that this man is incompetent to practice law. I think that's quite a stretch. I think no court in America would certify this doctor as an expert in courtroom proceedings. And when I think you weigh that against what Judge Olivito wrote, where he found literally no problem with Mr. Carpino's courtroom proceedings, that you have to defer to the trial judge in that instance over the doctor. The second piece of evidence the second issue that Dr. Pelt looked to was the allegation, and I think it's an unsubstantiated allegation at this point, from Mr. Carpino's son that Mr. Carpino had improperly used his Social Security number at one point to obtain a credit card. Now, Mr. Carpino had a falling out with his son a long time ago. They are not on good terms, and Mr. Carpino did not have a chance to rebut that in this case. This is little more than an allegation from the son to the disciplinary counsel that was passed on to Dr. Pelt. Now, while we're talking about medical evidence,
let me ask you a question, Mr. Reeder.
Sure.
If I read your brief correctly, you're asking that your client be permitted to retire with no sanction.
Well, he has retired, yes, okay. Justice O'Donnell.
Has he withdrawn from the practice of law in the state of Ohio?
He is no longer practicing. He has not resigned.
That's not my question. The question is, has he withdrawn from practicing law?
Well, if you mean has he resigned his license, he has not resigned his license.
Okay.
He is no longer practicing law, and in fact has not been practicing law now.
There would be nothing to preclude him. I mean, according to the request you have for us, since he's retired, there'd be nothing to indicate that he couldn't undertake representation of another client in another case or in another context.
Right. Well, Justice O'Donnell, let me answer that. First of all, Mr. Carpino has committed to not practicing. But what we recommended, and the disciplinary counsel raised this point, I think it's a fair one, what we recommend is that an order from this court recognize, first of all, that this does not meet the very high standard for a mental health suspension, and secondly, that rather than sending this proceeding back down to this disciplinary board for further proceedings, which is what would happen, that the court enter an order recognizing his retirement, staying the proceeding, but stating specifically that if Mr. Carpino ever wants to become an active lawyer again in practice, that he would first need this court's permission to do so.
Counsel, I don't know that we have the ability to fashion that type of a response to your clients or tailor something to those sort of needs. What's your client's aversion to just resigning, turning his license in?
Well, I think three things. One, I think he believes that the claims against him are unfounded, particularly as to the mental health suspension. Two, I think he views that as really an unfitting ending to a very long and, as I said, until now, unblemished career. And three, I think practically speaking, in the future, if he was seeking employment in some other context and he had to report that he had resigned his license, which I think perhaps would have to be resigned with discipline pending, I think he thinks that would potentially have negative ramifications for him in the future.
How old is your client?
He's 70 years old. However, he is not a wealthy man. He often took appointed cases from courts, has not made a lot of money practicing law, and I think if possible may try to work in some other area in the future.
Well, I think, you know, based on that statement, we have to be doubly diligent in how we assess this, because you're telling us that although you're making representations that he's retired at this time, there's the intent here that he may seek employment where his legal license is of some value,
that seems
to be a problem, and yet you would like us to fashion some kind of hybrid solution here that's a suspension that's not quite a suspension?
Well, that is the second issue in the case. Can I get back to the first issue, which is really a threshold issue in the case, which is whether there is appropriate evidence here to support the high burden of proving a mental health suspension. Now, if the court agrees with me, one possibility is to send the case back down to the board, and they will have further proceedings, and we'll determine what the appropriate sanction is, if any, for Mr. Carpino. And I propose another possible resolution to this case. But as to the mental health question, the court needs to keep in mind other cases that it has seen where mental health has been at issue. And the allegations in this case fall far short of what the court has seen in other mental health cases. And we reviewed the files here at the court. We found four cases since 2002, where regrettably an attorney has had a diagnosis that required a mental health suspension. And just let me describe a couple of those cases. In one case, the lawyer suffered from a paranoid personality disorder. She believed that there was a quasi-government conspiracy plotting to kill her mother. In another case, the lawyer had senile dementia and Alzheimer's and couldn't remember when she was married or the names of her grandchildren and often didn't bathe. There are two other cases where lawyers had such a significant impairment that they rarely left their home and interacted with others. And that is a far cry from the allegations against Mr. Carpino. In the Christian Appellate Court decision, which is one of the cases that is at issue here, Judge Vukovich wrote in a concurring opinion that he believed Mr. Carpino's advocacy was zealous. Now, he went on to say that it may have been overzealous and pointed to some examples. But this is not the kind of case where a lawyer has withdrawn and just cannot function. And that is, I think, the standard that the court has typically looked to determine whether the severe sanction of a mental health suspension is in order. And there are two other cases I would refer the court to. The first one is the Hunter case, which was just decided by the court 2 weeks ago. In that case, the attorney misappropriated $300,000. And the treating physician in that case stated that that lawyer was clearly impaired in her ability to think clearly and that she suffered from a major depressive disorder. Now, in that case, not only, and Mr. Berger handled this case, not only was that not a case where the lawyer got a mental health suspension, but in that case, the court did not even find that the impairment there rose to the level of mitigating evidence. A second case is the Loudon case, which is another, the Toledo Bar versus Loudon, which is another case the court decided this year. And in that case, the lawyer had forged his client's signature, had not appeared for court proceedings, and was diagnosed with a bipolar disorder. So significant that this lawyer was having paranoid delusions. Now, in that case, the conduct merited a two-year sentence, or two-year suspension, but the court found the bipolar disorder to be mitigating in that case and suspended the sentence. And I think a paranoid delusions is a more gross diagnosis than what we have at issue in this case. So for those reasons, we submit that the disciplinary counsel has not proved both that there's a gross impairment of judgment and that gross impairment substantially impairs the ability to practice law. There are two or three other factors I think the court should consider in resolving this case. As I stated, Mr. Carpino was not reprimanded by the two trial judges in either of these cases. I think he's a lawyer who's grown old. He's practiced for a long time. He's shown some frustration with the system. As times have changed, maybe he has not changed appropriately in terms of keeping up with technology and things like that. He types on a typewriter his own pleadings. And we believe that an appropriate decision would be, one, that there's not a mental health suspension warranted in this case, and two, rather than sending this case back down to the board, recognizing his long career, his retirement, the fact that he is no longer a threat to the public because he's no longer practicing a law, and that the court stated in its order that for Mr. Carpino to be able to practice again, that he would first need the court's permission. And I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Counsel, what would that stay be based on? I mean, we have a certain categories of stays to be, or certain process here, and I'm just at a loss. What would we, in essence, base the suspension on if not a mental illness suspension?
Well, I'm saying you would stay this proceeding against him. Rather than sending it back down to the board, this court could stay, it could dismiss, it could also stay the proceedings against him. And I think that's consistent with the court's plenary power, which Bar Rule 5 gives this court plenary power over disciplinary proceedings.
Have you located a case in which we've entered into this kind of a creative solution?
I have not, Justice O'Connor, but I believe the Shimko case from 2004 also recognizes the broad powers of the court to fashion a remedy. These cases are very fact-driven. I think this is a unique case, and I think that would be an appropriate resolution.
Well, the other alternative wouldn't it, if we were to find that this is not a mental disability case, to let the process continue on, because he's made statements here. A number of these statements and conduct in which he's engaged is conduct for which lawyers have been sanctioned in the past, public reprimand or whatever, And that would be the other alternative, would it not be?
That's true.
He's not mentally ill, but doesn't reach the high standard of mental illness, but there's conduct here that really ought to be reviewed by the process and give us a recommendation.
That's true, Mr. Chief Justice. In light of the fact that these issues do not rise to some of the disciplinary cases that come before the court where a client has stole a client funds, committed fraud on the court, or things like that, in light of his retirement and his age, I think some of those considerations would support the remedy I proposed, but the alternative, you're right, is to send this back and to see if there's a public reprimand or something like that in that court. I will say that in the interest of economy issues for the Bar Council, I don't know if this is something they would continue to pursue, but I think the remedy we suggested would be appropriate as well.
Thank you, Mr. Radler. Mr. Berger.
May it please the court, Robert Berger for Relator, Office of Disciplinary Counsel. The question before this court today is whether or not to suspend Joseph Carpino, the respondent, for mental illness. The medical evidence in this matter is uncontradicted. The medical evidence indicates the respondent is currently suffering from an existing mental illness, bipolar disorder, that this mental illness grossly impairs his judgment, and that this mental illness substantially impairs his ability to practice law. In addition to this uncontradicted medical evidence, there are three other categories of evidence that also support finding the respondent is currently impaired. First, respondent admits the odd and inappropriate behavior and the pleadings that do not make sense that he filed as detailed in the disciplinary complaint. Second, respondent has filed numerous pro se pleadings before this court that the board found to be improper, unintelligible, impertinent, immaterial. Third, there are 7 sworn affidavits in the record in this matter. These affidavits are from 3 judges, 1 magistrate, 2 assistant prosecuting attorneys, and 1 clerk of courts. All of these parties have personally observed respondent on a regular basis, and all of these affidavits indicate respondent no longer has the competence to practice law. Respondent's counsel has indicated that respondent had an unblemished record prior to the proceeding that brings us here today. The 2 Court of Appeals decisions reviewing respondent's misconduct from 2000 and 2002 and the 7 sworn affidavits indicate otherwise. Respondent's counsel pointed to the letter from Judge Olivito as vouching for respondent's competence in practicing law. The record contains 7 affidavits from parties respondent has recently regularly appeared before, all who attest respondent now lacks the competence to practice law. When reviewing the medical evidence in the matter, there are the 2 reports from Dr. Pelt and the 5 pages of treatment notes from Dr. Young. Interestingly, Dr. Pelt and Dr. Young both came to the same conclusion for respondent's diagnosis. Both indicate respondent suffers from bipolar disorder and manic episodes. Where their information differs is Dr. Pelt applied the actual standard required for a mental illness suspension. Dr. Pelt found that respondent suffers from a mental illness pursuant to the definition in the Ohio Revised Code. Dr. Pelt identified that mental illness as bipolar disorder, and Dr. Pelt concluded that that mental illness grossly impairs respondent's judgment. And judgment is the primary thing clients hire attorneys for. Respondent's counsel requests relief that is unprecedented and is available nowhere in the rules governing either the disciplinary process or a mental illness proceeding. Further, respondent's
counsel,
mental illness.
What is his present status?
What is Mr. Carpino's present status? If you examine Dr. Pelt's report.
No, I mean with his status in terms of registration.
Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Yes.
Mr. Carpino is currently registered as retired. Retirement status is a voluntary change of registration from active to retired. He did so earlier this year. Mr. Carpino could go online today, tomorrow, next week, and change his status from retired to active simply by completing a registration form and paying the registration fee.
And he would have to certify that he's up to date on his CLE.
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right. And retired, and for some reason I have in my mind we have inactive status. That is the retired status?
No, there is a separate status that is inactive status that sometimes attorneys take when they have their license but they're not currently practicing. Retired status, I believe, is reserved for people who are over maybe 65 or 70 years old.
And is it any harder to get back in from an inactive status?
No, inactive status, again, is a voluntary status.
So you can come back in same way, same hoop.
Exactly.
CLE just and...
By simply filling out a form, completing the CLEs, and paying the registration fee.
Right. Do you have any question that we have the authority to place conditions on someone in his circumstances if they apply, reapply, to put conditions on that readmission?
The court certainly has the ability to fashion a creative remedy, but such a remedy is unprecedented and not supported by the evidence in this matter. The evidence in this matter indicates that the respondent is currently suffering from mental illness, and as such, relator is seeking that suspension.
The specific request, I believe, would be that we state that he cannot return to active status without, and maybe this wasn't the request, but this is the one that I would suggest, without offering medical evidence that he has no mental health issues that prevent him from being able to. In other words, make him cross the hoop that a suspension, if he were suspended for mental illness, he can get back in once he shows that he's no longer mentally ill, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
So you could put those, couldn't you put those requirements on, just saying you have to meet those same tests that you would have to meet if you were to come back from a mental illness suspension without actually imposing the mental illness suspension?
Your Honor, relator would suggest that's opening a can of worms by creating a separate class or category of action with regard to the mental illness proceeding. GovBar Rule 5, Section 7 does not allow for such a result. Further, by reaching such a result in this matter, it would invite other attorneys to seek such a result in order to avoid either a mental illness suspension or disciplinary action. So by fashioning a special remedy in this case, it would invite other attorneys to also seek such a remedy, which is clearly outside of what the current rules allow.
Would it not achieve the same purpose? I mean, the end result would be the same, though, wouldn't it? Except for the, I mean, he's arguing there's a stigma attached for a determination of mental illness that he would like to avoid, that he would like to fade off into the sunset and not have that stigma attached.
Certainly, and as it was mentioned earlier, respondent could resign his law license as well and avoid that kind of stigma. It's an unfortunate situation, and certainly relator has attempted to create to treat Mr. Carpino with compassion and dignity throughout this process. This is not a process that anyone relishes going through, yet the rules are clear as to what the procedure is for determining whether or not an attorney suffers from mental illness and the consequences of that determination.
And Mr. Berger, if he would resign, would it be with disciplinary action pending? And would that not be the mar that he's trying to avoid?
Your Honor, if a resignation would be submitted, the disciplinary counsel would issue a sealed report making a recommendation to this court as to whether this court should accept the recommendation and upon what grounds, and then it would be up to the court to determine what was appropriate.
Counsel, I think we're still overlooking a basic problem in this case, is that whether he retires or whether we just dismiss the mental health suspension for failure of proof, there's still an underlying disciplinary charges against him that remain pending, are there not?
That's correct, Your Honor. If Mr. Carpino would resign, of course that would conclude the disciplinary process. If the court finds it's not proper to suspend Mr. Carpino for mental illness, at that point the case would be returned to the board for a proceeding on the disciplinary case.
And we don't have any evidence in front of us at this point as to the merits of those underlying charges.
That's correct, Your Honor. The way the mental illness proceeding works, once an allegation of mental illness is raised, the disciplinary case is held in abeyance, and the mental illness matter is then followed to either determining whether or not the party suffers from mental illness and whether or not the board certifies the matter.
A full resignation, which takes them out completely and ends the matter in most cases, any attorney that is in a disciplinary proceeding can't retire and just avoid or suspend or stay all the disciplinary actions because he's just retired.
That's correct, Your Honor. A retired or inactive status would not stay the underlying disciplinary case, and that would still need to be addressed by the board.
And the board would look at the circumstances of the underlying disciplinary and then in its discretion determine what it wants to do. There's no rule that would have to even go up here. Is that correct?
The board, if the court declined to order a mental illness suspension, the matter would be returned to the board for hearing on the underlying disciplinary complaint. The board would then hear evidence and make a determination. In the disciplinary complaint, respondent's mental illness would be a mitigating factor in determining the appropriate sanction, but I don't know that it would be grounds for a dismissal of the underlying disciplinary complaint.
Under governing rule 7A, regarding the mental illness suspension, that if that is done, it's basically a permanent situation. Have we ever had individuals who have come out of a mental illness suspension?
Your Honor, I do not know whether previously mental illness suspended attorneys have ever been readmitted, but it does allow for that in the rule. Once, if the attorney can demonstrate they have been returned to competence, they can reapply to be readmitted.
So it's not in the nature of a permanent disbarment.
That's correct. It would be an interim suspension.
Thank you.
Counsel, our rules would allow him to, after considering today's discussion, still resign with discipline pending before the result of this case is announced, would it not?
Yes, it would. Until the decision in this matter was entered, certainly he could submit the sworn affidavit, and that could be considered by the court as well as the evidence in this matter.
Okay.
Based upon the uncontradicted medical evidence from Dr. Pelt, the numerous odd and inappropriate pleadings filed by respondent, both on behalf of several clients and on behalf of himself in this matter, and also based upon the 7 sworn affidavits from parties, all who've personally observed respondent and concluded that he is no longer capable of practicing law, relator requests this court invoke the power in GovBar Rule 5, Section 7, and order a mental illness suspension for the respondent. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Berger. Mr. Raylor, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you. 3 quick points. First, while the disciplinary counsel has suggested that the medical evidence is undisputed, Dr. Young, who is Mr. Carpino's treating physician at the VA, submitted reports where he described the bipolar condition as moderate. That is far from a gross impairment. Second, although the Court of Appeals judges have been critical of Mr. Carpino's performance in these 2 cases, they did not find in the Christian case that his conduct or his performance was ineffective assistance. They specifically found that it wasn't. And third, if the court under Bar Rule 7 that Justice Lansing referred to, the rule only says that the court may enter a mental health suspension, and it certainly has other options available to it. One of those is the remedy I proposed. If the case is remanded, to follow up on Justice Pfeiffer's question, I think this is the kind of case where a resignation by Mr. Carpino now is much more of a significant penalty than what will happen if it goes back down. These are not the most serious allegations that the board typically sees, and I think the medical evidence would work as a mitigating factor in
Mr.
those
Raylor,
considerations.
Mr. Raylor, bipolar condition is increasingly treatable. Another alternative would be for your client, your pro bono in this, I know, would be to to submit to treatment, I mean, serious treatment, drugs and so forth, it's very treatable. Is he considered that?
Well, I think the record shows that he has been treated. He's been taking medications.
I couldn't tell from the briefs, maybe I missed it. How current that is. I mean, has he been on and off? There's a tendency to go on and off the medication when one feels better. What's his recent history? Do you know?
My understanding that he's been on the medication consistently, but I do not have evidence in the record on that issue. But he was diagnosed a long time ago, has received treatment, and I think Dr. Pelt suggested even in his report that the treatment be enhanced, but I don't think he suggested that he wasn't being treated at all as of the time that Dr. Pelt did his evaluation.
I mean, if he's being treated and successfully for some period of time and we find that he should be suspended, we adopt the board's recommendation. The process for him re-entering, it seems to me, could be fairly quick if he's depending upon the circumstances. Is that something you've considered at all for him?
Well, I think there's probably three responses. One, I think he thinks he doesn't meet the mental health definition.
Right. But if we say he does, then...
Two, in response to the question I think Justice Lansinger asked, I don't know of any case where anyone has successfully come back from that.
I think we've had one or... Yeah. I may be wrong, but it seems to me we've had... I know we've had applications to come back.
And then three, the fact of the matter is that Joe Carpino is not going to practice law again in Ohio. Going back to Justice O'Donnell's question, I think he feels that there is quite a stigma having had his license taken away on a mental health basis.
But a way to remove that stigma is to prove to the board and to us that he's successfully being treated, and then have that finding eliminated or at least...
That's true. In this proceeding, the initial burden, of course, is on the disciplinary counsel to meet the pretty high bar for showing that a mental health suspension is appropriate in the first place, and we rest on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.